You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome, listeners. You are currently listening to Just Showing Up. I'm your host, Brianna Heltz, on Breadbox Media. Again, welcome. Thank you for tuning in on this weekend when, hey, you could be outside, like, barbecuing or sitting out by your pool. Though, I don't know. It is May. Maybe it's not pool weather yet where you are. We have actually had, lo and behold, some sunny, warm weather here in Denver, which is great because we'd had so much rain. And I've talked before about how my kids, they've had all these soccer games canceled, and it's just been, yeah, it's been crazy. But anyway, it's warm here now. My kids had their, my elementary aged kids had their school field day on Friday morning. And hey, we actually got to have it outdoors this year. Last year, their field day got totally rained out. And thank goodness the school was much smaller at that time, because the school had to have field day in a small gym, and they had to modify a lot of what they were going to do. When I was a kid, it was called Olympic Day at my school, and you would compete in all these different events. Like, they had shot put and javelin and various races, and everything was all pretty competitive, you know, like every event was something you could win a ribbon in potentially. But I am like the world's, I am not a good athlete. I'm the world's worst athlete. And so once I got old enough in school on Olympic Day, or leading up to Olympic Day, when you'd sign up for events, I didn't sign up for events that were necessarily, you know, that necessarily seemed the most fun for me. I would look at the sign-up sheet and see, you know, events where the fewest number of people had signed up to compete, and then I would sign up for those because that was the only way, the only chance I had to earn a ribbon, because I was not beating anybody out for the stuff. Yeah, I've never been an athlete. I have negative athletic ability, which is kind of funny. I don't know. I've always been that way. Never really been into sports. I like watching my kids play, but other than that, anyway. So my kids had field day on Friday morning at school, and my husband and I went to watch, and their field day, unlike the one that I used to have at my school, there were a lot of, like, cooperative game. There were a couple events where you could earn a ribbon, but mostly it was just, you know, group games, and it was still fun to watch. Nice to be out in the sun, and all that good stuff. And let's see, only one of my kids placed in an event. There were class races where, each classroom raced some distance, and one of my fifth graders, one of my sons, he actually was third fastest in his class of, I don't know, 20 some kids maybe. So that was cool. He's very fond of mine. He is like the anti-me when I was a kid. He's very athletic. We put him, you know, on a swim team last summer. First time ever, you know, doing, you know, like, the different strokes. I mean, he could swim before, but, you know, first time on a swim team. And the kid just, like, took off. I mean, he was winning ribbons at meets, and even at the citywide meet, he got ribbons. I mean, he's awesome. And then this past fall, he really wanted to play soccer. We put him on this soccer team. This team's been together for a while. the boys, some of these boys are very, very good. And I was a little nervous. You know, I felt like I was, you know, throwing my son into the proverbial, throwing him to the sharks. Is that how you say it? And yet he has done amazingly well. Like, so he's a kid where it kind of seems like you put him in, you kind of put him anywhere and he rises to the challenge, athletic, with his athletic ability. And so anyway, he's the auntie me. He is also adopted, so I did not have the opportunity to pass down to him my defective athlete genes. But my husband, he likes to play. Shout out again to my husband, who's like a listener now. He likes to play basketball, and he's good. I admit I don't watch when they play. My husband organizes, starting in like late spring, these get-togethers at a local park. I think I've talked about this before, where the husbands all play basketball, the wives sit in the grass, and the kids play. And there's a place there at this park for kids to ride their bikes or scooters, and there's swings and a playground. It's nice. No bathrooms. I think I've mentioned this before, too. There are no bathrooms at this park, which presents a whole host of challenges. But anyway, it's fun. And so my husband likes to play basketball, and he's good. But anyway, all of that to say, I'm no athlete. I own it, you know. And so, yeah. So, field day. That was field day. Let's see. What else can I tell you about my week? So, I am less than a month away from my due date. I am due with baby number 9. Yes, you heard that correctly. 9. N-I-N-E. Numero nueve. It's my 5th biological baby, though. Four of our children are adopted. So sort of, you know, baby numero cinco. But anyway, less than a month away from my due date. June 17th is when I'm due. And I was having like all these contractions, I don't know, several days ago. And they were kind of not letting up. And I was like, I hope this is okay. Well, it turns out my baby was like, prior to that, she'd been up so... It's a girl, by the way. Baby girl numero cinco, because all of our babies that we have had biologically are girls. We have 2 sons, but they are both adopted. They're twins. Anyway, the baby, prior to this series of days where I'd had all these contractions, right, the baby was like up... You know, she was like up high and kind of hanging out sideways, and I'm starting to get paranoid. Like, is she going to go head down in time? And, you know, this whole thing. And I have this great, probably highly irrational fear of like having to be induced or having an inversion, or which is where they try to move the baby from the outside. And then a huge fear of having a C-section. I've never had one. I've never been induced. I've never had to have an inversion, but I don't know. So I'm just terrified. I don't know. I'm weird. I have quirks, you could say. So anyway, all that to say, so the baby's like hanging out up high and sideways, and it's so uncomfortable. Like, my back was really hurting, and I'm thinking, how am I going to go another whole month like this? Well, anyway, apparently these contractions that I was having, the baby was like flipping, and she's totally head down now, engaged. We still have, you know, a little under a month to go, so she could, I guess, potentially still wiggle out of position. But for now, anyway, man, I can breathe again. Life is good. The contractions settled down. It's fabulous. But I am also well aware that the baby is still growing, and this is going to be a long month. It's always that final, you know, push, that final countdown, that final 3-4 weeks to labor is brutal, right? Because you're so ready to be done, like yesterday, you know? So less than a month to go. Pretty excited, but I also feel like I haven't, you know, I haven't switched into we're about to have a baby mode yet, because, you know, my kids, it's like right now we're just getting to the end of the school year. Like, okay, done with field day. Then this coming week, you know, my middle schooler has finals and the kids are wrapping up their school year and my other kids. And so I kind of feel like once school's out, they're done Wednesday. Wednesday's their last day. Once they're done, then I can, you know, shift my attention to baby and getting ready for baby. We need to get a crib. All of my biological children have been born 3 years apart. We did not plan it that way. We are, you know, we don't, my husband and I, we're Catholic. We don't use contraception, but we also don't, follow NFP, like, rigorously. We're just kind of open. And so, open to children when God gives them. And God has given them, like, clockwork, like 3 years apart. And so all of that to say, I'm a little out of practice, you know, like I'm like, oh, I gotta get baby stuff and I don't know, a crib and a bassinet and all of that. So I'm really looking forward to getting to, you know, to get my nesting on and kind of dive into that once kids are done with school. So that is kind of where we're at these days. Good stuff on the show today. We're going to talk about women. We're going to talk about women today. We're going to talk about the joint directive the federal government just issued. Good stuff coming up. Stay here. This is Just Showing Up with your host, Brianna Helt.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Well, we are back. I am your host, Brianna Helt. This is Just Showing Up on Breadbox Media. So, let's see. Before the break, you learned that I am a terrible, no good athlete. I've never been good at sports. If you didn't know that about me before, you know now. And I am less than a month from my due date. My baby, so excited. My kids are so excited. It's going to be great. There is nothing, I don't know, there's just nothing like the gift of a new baby or child to, you know, to a family. And I think that that is a huge way that God kind of renews the family every so often. Four of my kids, soon to be five, I'm pregnant with my fifth biological baby right now. So soon I will have five biological kids. But then I also have four adopted children as well. And they joined our family at my twin sons were 16 months old and my daughters were 2 and 4. And every time we have either had a baby or had a child, an adopted child join our family, it's just been such a beautiful thing. And the transitions have all gone surprisingly well. It's just, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how, you know, you, if you are married or thinking about marriage or whatever, whoever you are, I don't know how you think about fertility or family planning or those kinds of things. I'm Catholic. I don't know if you are or not, but regardless, you know, it's interesting because I think our culture is in this place where, you know, we think of it as family planning. I mean, we are going to plan out every little detail. And some people are more planners in general than others. And it makes sense. I mean, you know, you're thinking about practical, logistical things. And it makes sense that you would apply that grid, I guess, to this area of life as well. And so, you know, like the number of children becomes a very big deal, or this concept that you would be open to children, like over the course of your marriage, is kind of a foreign concept. It's sort of like you plan your kids, you space them out the way you want them, and you know, you don't leave anything, you don't leave anything to chance or whatever. And yeah, it's just kind of interesting. And it was really, I wasn't always Catholic. I'm a convert. I've been Catholic now for 4.5 years. And it was actually the Catholic Church's teachings, I guess, or writings, if you will, on marriage, children, contraception, that really compelled me and drove me eventually into the Catholic Church, my husband as well. And it's, maybe that's ironic, because the Catholic beliefs, which, let's be honest, I mean, the Catholic view on these issues is not like, oh, it's, you know, this denomination's view and Methodists think this or whatever. It's really, the Catholic position is the historic Christian position, because even non-Catholic Christians up until the 1930s, were opposed, I guess, to contraception, or another way of saying that was they believed that a marriage would be open, you know, would remain open to children. So I get that, you know, it's kind of weird. It was like, these are some beliefs that I found very compelling, historically compelling, and eventually would, you know, or would lead to my eventual conversion to Catholicism. But I get that, you know, those very beliefs are often a hurdle to or an obstacle to somebody joining the Catholic Church or even giving it a second look. Many Catholics don't believe these teachings at all and contracept. And so anyway, all of that to say that, you know, for us, for my husband and I, you know, we're open to children. And I love how in the book Love and Responsibility, which was written by Saint Pope John Paul II before he was Pope. And I'm not going to say his name because I don't know how to pronounce it. Is it Carl? Carol? Wotila? Wotila? I don't know how to say his name. I apologize for that. Yet another shortcoming. I'm not an athlete and I cannot pronounce St. Pope John Paul II's name. Anyway, but in Love and Responsibility, you know, he talks about how when we come together in marriage, when we are intimate with one another, we are, you know, we should strive to have this disposition of, you know, I may become a mother or I may become a father, and how this openness can span the trajectory of the marriage. You know, marriage is ordered towards children, and those aren't necessarily easy teachings or concepts or whatever, but it's also very beautiful. And all of this to say that I feel like I've seen it time and again in my family. I'm sure everybody we know thinks we're crazy because we have so many kids and we apparently continue to be open to them, but it really just has been so beautiful for every single one of us. For all my other kids, it is such a joy to receive a new baby into the family. And so yeah, we're super just super excited about that. And I think something is kind of interesting to me. So I'm reading, you know, the classic published in 1963, Betty Friedan's, I probably mispronounced her name too, The Feminine Mystique. And it's interesting because she describes, like when she describes the female kind of discontent or struggle with, I guess, with motherhood or with being a woman in general. Like, it's fascinating because what she describes, I mean, it could have been written today. And it could have been written today, not just by a radical feminist, but by anybody who spends any amount of time talking with and listening to mothers. And it's interesting to me. I did not grow up dreaming about being a mom someday. I was not raised as a Catholic, and I didn't grow up with that paradigm at all. That, you know, marriage and children are tied inextricably together or whatever. And I was raised in a Christian home, but we weren't Catholic, and I was an only child. I didn't have any siblings. And so all of that to say, like, I have all these kids, and I'm very comfortable, I guess. I'm very comfortable with my identity as a mom, or as a Catholic woman called to the vocation of marriage. We talk about, you know, vocation, and so I feel very comfortable with that. And I think people assume that, you know, I must have been that person that loved to babysit and like loves hanging out with kids. I don't know, like there's something about me, you know, like I'm like Mr. Rogers or something. But the truth, it's quite the opposite, you know, like as a kid, I was never really around newborn babies, and I always knew I wanted to get married someday, but I never thought I wanted a big family. Really never very much enjoyed babysitting. The money was nice. But I wasn't a kid person. That's what I'm trying to say. That's what I'm taking this whole entire segment apparently to say. I was never a kid person. And, you know, the thought of becoming a teacher, oh, good grief, I would never want to do that. I did homeschool. I did homeschool for 5 years. And I don't miss it. I don't miss it. I don't homeschool anymore. But anyway, so I think there's this expectation that if you are, if you have all these kids, or you're open to more children, or open to life, or you're not using birth control, you must be a kid person or have this crazy, weird genetic predisposition to enjoying a lot of chaos and lost shoes and vomit cleanup. But that's really not the case. And so anyway, I don't know. I mean, I've been thinking a lot about what I'm reading in this book, The Feminine Mystique, and this problem that, yeah, I mean, that it's not this struggle, this female struggle to, I don't know, accept our identity or accept our vocation, or, you know, whatever, our motherhood. It was not confined to the 1950s or the 1960s, and it's not confined to secular society or more radical feminist circles. I mean, again, I'm hearing a lot of this same stuff in my Catholics, you know, my girlfriends, my Catholic friends, and I think it's really interesting. And I just wonder, like, what is it? Like, do we women, and I mean, I struggle with it too, to a degree, though, like I said, I'm pretty comfortable with who I am, and what I do. And, I don't know. I wonder, like, how can we accept these blessings that God gives us as blessings, and how can we fight against resentment, exhaustion, burnout? How do we do that? So, I don't know. I want to talk more about that when we come back. This is Just Showing Up, and I'm your host, Brianna Health, on Redbox Media.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
We are back. This is Just Showing Up. I'm your host, Brianna Health, on Breadbox Media. Right before the break, I was talking about this kind of struggle, I guess. The struggle we women have in accepting our identity. If we're Catholic women, you know, we have this understanding of, this call to the vocation of marriage. And even if we're not Catholic women, if we're married, you know, maybe we don't have kids yet, but we're thinking about having kids, or maybe you do have kids. Maybe you are, you know, maybe you're a man, a husband. Anyway, so just having this conversation about accepting our identity as women, you know, I go to a monthly small group at my church. It's a group of married women, and most of us are moms. Not all, but the majority of us do have kids. And I think that, well, anyway, okay, so I'm getting off track here. I blame the pregnancy. If you're just tuning in, I am due in less than a month. So I'm very pregnant and very scatterbrained, clearly. Anyway, so this small group, we meet once a month, and there's usually, you know, a topic for discussion or whatever. And we just met this past week, Wednesday night, actually. And the topic for discussion, we watched the video that the Vatican put out of Pope Francis's prayer intentions. I guess it's for the month of May, I think. I'm sorry if I am wrong. Sometimes I'm wrong, but I would never admit that to my husband or my kids. Just kidding. Anyway, so we watched this video, and, you know, his prayer intention for the month of May is for women, you know, women around the world, women who are oppressed or, you know, struggling. Anyway, it was, and then we had a discussion about, about our experience as women, our experiences as women, and where do we see women maybe, being oppressed or I guess, yeah, in our culture, in our modern world today. And, you know, one thing that kind of kept coming out was the cultural expectation, some of these expectations of women. And I was saying too before the break, you know, I'm reading The Feminine Mystique right now by Betty Friedan. You know, classic feminist book published in 1963. And I've been floored by how she describes these struggles that women of the 50s and 60s were voicing. And the fascinating thing is that they're the same darn struggles that that women are voicing today. And, you know, this question of am I enough? Is what I do enough? You know, why don't I feel fulfilled in my role as a mother, or in my call to motherhood, I guess? You know, as Catholic women, we believe that we have a vocation, we have a something that God has called us to do. And if you are married, if you're called to marriage, part of what you are also called to do, we believe, is to be open to children. You know, God, we believe that God created children as this sign, as this fruit of a loving marriage relationship, and that, you know, your sexuality expressed in marriage, sex in marriage, is this sign of, you know, total acceptance of your spouse and your yes. You know, you're giving your yes. I give you all of me, including my fertility and the potential to conceive a child. So anyway, it's interesting to sit and think about, these struggles that mothers face, that women face, and how they're the same things that this, you know, radical feminist was pointing out back in the early 60s. And so I'm not too far into the book yet, by the way. I look forward to getting deeper into it. I love reading that kind of stuff. I admit, maybe I'm weird. Anyway, but I don't know. I think it's kind of interesting. And, you know, my contribution to the conversation at my small group was, first of all, I'm not a big sharer in groups. It's funny that I have a radio show and I talk at you for like an hour every week, because if you get me into like a small group, I don't tend to share a lot, which is kind of funny. I don't know. Anyway, some people are group sharers, some are not. I don't know. I'm an introvert, so I'm not. But one of the things I did share was just that I think that You know, we mothers, we modern Western mothers have a lot of insecurity, I think, when it comes to our identity. I think we have a hard time accepting our identity. And, you know, you look at like the founders, you know, like the founding fathers of, I guess, of psychology, and how like this whole self-actualization or identity development was pivotal. I mean, that was crucial. Like that was something that, you know, whether it was Erik Erikson or Jung or Freud, everybody was sort of trying to, or Adler, everybody was trying to theorize or kind of come up with this way to see, I guess, the human person and how the human person's identity develops. And it's very interesting. And I was a psychology major in college, and I find that stuff fascinating. I'm a nerd, I know. But I think it's very interesting. And anyway, so when we talk about our identity, there's just this uneasiness, I think, among women and mothers. And we console ourselves with, oh, it's just a phase, we'll be done with diapers soon. Or, oh, it's just a, you know, this is just like a snapshot of our life. When our kids are out of the house, then, you know, life can begin. Or this is just too hard. This is too hard. I don't want any more kids at all. And I don't know. I think it's tough. And yet when I read these beautiful writings from, you know, whether it was early church fathers papal encyclicals or exhortations, you know, things the popes have written over the centuries. I'm not just talking about modern popes. I'm talking about even some of the ones even farther back. You know, you read these things and the beautiful vision that God sets out for men and for women and for marriage, it's so beautiful. And I just feel like there's this disconnect there, maybe, between how women, you know, in Betty Friedan's book, and women today, this disconnect between how we envision our calling and how it's been expressed or what have you by the church. And I don't know what the answer is, you know. And I don't think the answer is to discount how absolutely difficult it is to be a mom. It is hard. I never thought I was like a super anxious person. I have some anxiety. Like, I get kind of anxious. I've got kids with special needs. You know, I have a kid with ADHD. I've got 8 kids. I'm about to have baby number 9. So I have like a lot of kids. 4 of my kids are adopted. And, you know, so we've, you know, dealt with various issues related to that. There are transitions into our family. And I don't know. I just, all of this to say, I'm not attempting to discount this angst or the difficulty that mothers face, which leads them to question, like, am I enough? Is this enough that I'm doing? I don't feel fulfilled. The church is full of it. The stuff that all these celibate men wrote about marriage and kids is like totally out of touch. Like, I don't want to discount that. I think there's something here, but I just wonder what it is. You know, how can we come to this place of, I don't know, of self-acceptance, of self-identity? And I don't have any answers. Apparently, I'm just wanting to ask general questions on the show today. Maybe you have the answer. I was actually, this past week, I was driving my kids to school, and I was stopped behind a truck, and the truck had this bumper sticker on it, and it just said, all it said was, trees are the answer. Trees are the answer. So, maybe that's the answer. Trees, go plant a tree. Anyway, so, all of that to say, I don't know. But I think there's something to this, and I think that maybe it takes a lifetime to come to the place where you accept what the Lord has given you. Maybe the answer is to pray to Mary, look to Mary, the Mother of God, who accepted her calling and gave her yes. And what a strong woman. What a strong woman she was. I just wanted to mention it. I think it's kind of interesting. And interesting to think that, you know, even in a culture where we have so much excess, and I really have to wonder if this is part of the issue. You know, we're not dealing with problems. We aren't necessarily dealing with problems so severe on the whole as women as maybe women in developing countries are. But I don't know. We're still struggling, and I don't know. I like to laugh, so I just like to keep a good sense of humor. About things, about motherhood, that helps a lot. Getting enough sleep, self-care, and giving yourself permission to say, hey, this is really hard. No matter how beautiful my calling is or how incredible the dignity of the human person, of woman is, this is tough stuff. Okay, we're going to be right back. I'm your host, Brianna Holt.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Hey everyone, I'm your host, Brianna Helt, on the Just Showing Up radio show on Breadbox Media. Just a heads up, because I have not given a shameless self-promotional plug yet today. Like I've said several times, I am Brianna Helt, the one, the only, probably not, but I am a writer, I'm a blogger. You can see my work at the National Catholic Register, as well as at my own personal blog, www.briannahelt.com. And I have a Facebook page as well. You can go like my page if you wouldn't mind. Please go like my page. And I do some other freelance work as well. Hoping to pick some more of that stuff up. And yeah, so anyway, switching gears now from our conversation about women and kind of this internal struggle to find acceptance to find the journey, I guess, to self-acceptance when you're a mother. It's hard, right? It's hard. And maybe that's the point. Maybe our spiritual journey, regardless who we are or what faith tradition we belong to or don't belong to, maybe that's the point. Maybe it's not supposed to be easy. Maybe struggle is, we should lean into that struggle. I don't know, but I don't like to struggle, so I'm not really sure. But anyway, before I switch gears, I do just want to encourage anybody out there, like, life is tough no matter what. And being a mom is hard, whether you have one kid, whether you have eight. And it's just, it's hard. You know, we have these friends of ours, they have, you know, they have biological children. They also have adopted children, and they're also foster parents. They are incredible people. And they just, man, I mean, they have such beautiful hearts, and they don't pretend that life is easy. They do not look for the, you know, the path of least resistance and stay there. They have such hearts for God's work, and hearts for Jesus's, Jesus's heart, I guess. And sometimes I think that we want life to be easy. It's kind of interesting in the adoption community. I felt like this was going to be quick and then we're going to change gears, but I'm still blathering on about this. But, you know, I feel like in the adoption community or foster care community, we've never personally been foster parents, by the way, but we do have four adopted kids. I feel like in those communities, there is somewhat more of a general self-acceptance that, one, I cannot 100% control what my children do or how they perform at school or how many incident reports they bring home every year at school. And there is also, too, a general acceptance that life isn't supposed to be easy. And I would say that these parents who are walking these paths with these kids, I don't know. I think there is just this, maybe it's subtle, but kind of this resignation maybe to, this resignation to the difficulties of just being a parent. And I think as an adoptive parent or a foster parent, I think you come to that realization, you know, if you've adopted a child that has a diagnosis or a mental illness or behavioral challenges or whatever it might be, a child that was not born to you, and you're helping that child be the best that he or she can be and helping them navigate the world, you do kind of have to, yeah, you realize, like, whoa, this is tough, life is messy, but I'm hanging on, you know, I'm here, I'm showing up. Which, by the way, you know, the title of my radio show is Just Showing Up. My blog used to be titled Just Showing Up back in the day. And that was because I just thought, you know, just show up. Sometimes that's all we can do is just show up. And it's enough. And God will do beautiful things with that. So anyway, I would just encourage all of you, like, take heart if you are parenting kids. It is crazy. It is hard. But it is good as well. And yeah, it's tough, but I think that we are capable of reaching some level of, acceptance of ourselves, our own limitations, and also of our vocation, our call to motherhood or fatherhood or marriage in general. I want to switch gears here now. I really am switching gears, to talk a little bit about this whole thing in the media. You know, we've been talking about the Target bathrooms, and now I wanted to talk a little bit about this joint directive that was issued by the federal government, the civil rights divisions of the Department of Justice and Department of Education, regarding transgendered students and facilities use of facilities in schools. A lot of the media was saying that, like, President Obama issued this thing. I don't really know how he fits in with all of it, because it really did come from the DOJ and DOE. I don't really get how it all works. Anyway, this thing was issued on May 13th, and it was a letter, and it they state, you know, it wasn't intended to be, like, new laws. It was more, I guess, supposed to be an explanation of, you know, existing laws or how they ought to be applied. And of course, if a school is non-compliant with these guidelines, then that school is at risk of losing federal funding. And it has to do with Title IX and some other things that I don't fully understand. And the main issue, the main thing that the media kind of is keying in on, and that many people are concerned about, myself included, is so there's a section called Sex Segregated Activities and Facilities, and then there's this heading, Restrooms and Locker Rooms. And I'm going to read what the joint directive says. It says, quote, a school may provide separate facilities on the basis of sex, but must allow transgender students access to such facilities consistent with their gender identity. A school may not require transgender students to use facilities inconsistent with their gender identity or to use individual user facilities when other students are not required to do so. End quote. So, okay. So, like, I have 7 kids in school. They are spread out between 2 different schools. Both are public schools, although one is a charter school. This has not been a problem for us at all yet, and odds are it won't be going into the future. However, you know, I am a parent that is not okay with Even if a student is identifying at, you know, even if a student, a male student, identifies as a female, I'm not wanting him around my daughters if they're undressing for PE or whatever, and vice versa with my sons. And I think people are right to be a little concerned about this. And I actually I wrote a freelance piece about this that's being published in a local publication. It's not published yet, but it's just kind of, the whole thing is just kind of interesting. And, you know, I'm not going to sit around worrying about it, because I will cross that bridge with my children when I get there. However, I think it is important to, as, you know, as citizens, and if you're a Catholic, you know, to think through some of these things. And I guess at the end of the day, you know, I just find it so incredibly heartbreaking that there is so much, I don't know, I guess, like, gender confusion is, that has got to be very difficult. And it's a hard road that these students are walking, these transgender students. There aren't many, statistically speaking. I can't remember what the stats are, but it's certainly a very, very tiny minority. But yet they do, I mean, they exist. And I think it's very difficult. And I just, you know, parents that encourage them down this path and encourage these transitions, and I don't know, it's just, it's heartbreaking. The whole thing is very heartbreaking. And I really encourage my kids, like, we are going to be charitable. We are going to love others no matter what. And you know, Pope Francis, in his recent encyclical, he had said, I talked about this in the article I wrote, he had said that, quote, the young need to be helped to accept their own body as it was created, end quote. And it kind of relates back to the prior conversation about accepting our vocation. You know, this whole idea of acceptance and accepting who God made you to be. And if there's disconnect there, you know, working through that and trusting that the Lord has a plan for you and created you a certain way because he wants to fulfill this plan for you. And by the way, I just feel the need to give this, like, disclaimer that gender dysphoria is real. And, you know, if you have a loved one struggling with that, getting some sort of professional help is very crucial and important. But just in general, you know, accepting yourself, accepting your body, accepting your call from God, and that may be a hard road. But then I think, you know, that's all part of the journey. So thank you all for listening. I'm your host, Brianna Held, on Just Showing Up with Breadbox Media. I will be talking to you next week.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.